I'm Ron Burgundy.
Hey, everybody, I am Kai Rizdahl.
And I am Molly Wood. Welcome to Make Me Smart. We are already in a better mood just because we are taping this. And we're joined, as always, by you. Because none of us is as smart as all of us.
Should it be none of us are as smart as anyone? I don't know. I don't know.
Probably. I'm surprised we haven't gotten a grammar email.
Oh, producer Jenny's head just exploded on the other side of the glass.
Because grammar. We're off script.
We are taking a break from the news this week because holidays and Thanksgiving and my mom's in town and, you know, all that stuff.
Holidays. Yes. I already did.
Really? Did
Can
you
I
just
say?
That?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I'll be doing it for days now, for weeks, really.
Wow.
I already had my Thanksgiving dinner.
But really?
Because my whole family came to town. Yeah, my mom was here last week and my dad, because they both turned 70 within a day of each other.
70.
And so my dad and my stepmom and my mom came and we made Thanksgiving dinner. I just got rid of my leftovers. I'm like so ahead of the curve, you guys.
That's, is that because you're working for me on Thanksgiving Day? Is that the deal?
Well, yeah, I mean, I always move Thanksgiving around.
Oh, do you?
Anyway, and then it was, and then since they were here, we just thought, let's do it like fully 3 weeks early.
Iconoclast to you. I had no idea.
I do what I want.
Can you even get a turkey 3 weeks ago?
You know, it was harder than I thought it was going to be.
Uh-huh, yeah, I thought so.
This is what my butcher actually said. Nobody's killing turkeys right now. I was like, well, that's kind of
So first of all, you have a butcher, and second of all, he says things like that. That's awesome. All right, we got to go. Jenny's giving me the moving along sign.
All right, we're getting in the holiday spirit. I had a delightful conversation, like one of my favorite things I have done in the past few weeks, with culinary historian Heather Arndt Anderson about a vegetable. It is one we take for granted. It might even be on a veggie plate next to some ranch dressing, but probably overlooked. And what is so fascinating is that, and this is why it's relevant to our show, this veggie used to be the avocado toast of its day.
You know, I happen to know what the veggie in question is, and I won't tell yet. I will just say that it's just as well that you did this interview, because I frankly think this particular vegetable is overrated. I'm just saying. I'm just saying. So anyway.
That's like the whole point of the interview.
All right. We've also got some advice from your favorite Make Me Smart guest, a little something called, I don't know if he's your favorite, but he was a good one, early one too, George Lakoff's Guide to the Holidays.
Amazing. And then, of course, we have a great answer to our Make Me Smart question from one of you. But first, let's take a walk back in vegetable time.
Wow. I don't even know.
The Victorian era mirrored the reign of Queen Victoria from late 1830s to 1901.
We should have gotten the newsreel guy to do that, right?
It was a time of relative peace, thanks in part to the strength of the Royal Navy.
I'm not doing that. It was also a time of technological innovation, the railway system, photography, the novel as literary form. Thank you very much. People were enjoying Gilbert and Sullivan as well, which was, if you think about it, the Hamilton of the time. True. It's true.
Hamilton of the time. And in the more posh, the poshest households, people were obsessed with a green vegetable imported from another country, and they loved to talk about it and write about it and tell other people about how healthy it is, like a superfood.
Guess what? It's not kale.
It's not kale. Heather Arndt Anderson is an author and culinary historian who has the greatest job ever. And while you, Kai, were off recording interviews about taxes, I got to talk to Heather about trendy vegetables. I don't know how familiar you are with our show, but we have a little bit of an ongoing obsession with avocado toast. So you can imagine how delighted we were when someone sent us your article titled "Celery Was the Avocado Toast of the Victorian Era," which made us obviously all collectively go, wait, what? Really?
Yeah, the Victorians in England became obsessed with celery. It was very hard to obtain. It was fussy to grow. It was expensive. And so, of course, this made it irresistible to wealthy Victorians.
I guess so.
Pretty soon, a whole special vase was created just to present celery on the table. It was on the first-class menu of the Titanic. The fancy hotels across England and America all had celery courses on their menus, like a specific course just for celery.
Wow. What is a celery vase? Can you describe that for us?
Yeah, it's kind of like a wide tulip-shaped vase, often made of crystal, and it has a little stand like a little foot. So it's a footed vase that would prominently and proudly display your beautiful bouquet of celery as the centerpiece of your table.
I have to ask how you found out about this.
Oh, gosh.
You know, the checkered history of celery.
You know, I spend a lot of time when I'm doing research for books or articles reading old householders' guides. And one of the things I'm obsessed with is dinner table and breakfast table setting etiquette. The guides that were written for the housekeepers and the butlers were very detailed. And I noticed this silly thing. I was looking for something about berry bowls at the time, and I found these celery vases kept popping up and their, you know, the propriety of using them. And so I just kind of went down that little research rabbit hole, which I love to do. And I found this whole world of celery obsession that had been lurking in the history books.
And then people would, there would be all these different recipes, right? People would cook celery and serve this kind of braised.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm not, you know, I'm not a celery hater, but that sounds kind of gross, braised celery.
Yeah, I'm not a, you know, I like a crunchy celery stick just as much as the next gal, but I'm not a huge fan of like the real braised, you know, because there's the two textures are sort of at odds with each other. There's the stringy lignin, which keeps the celery plant upright. And then there's the sort of the crispy parts in between the strings that are just going to get real mushy. So it's like the worst of both worlds as far as a cooked vegetable goes.
What happened to celery? Why did it lose popularity?
Well, we started growing it in the States. In Michigan, there are lots of places. Well, Kalamazoo, Michigan is known as the celery city. But the soils in Michigan near the Great Lakes are similar to how they are in Holland. You know, lots of wetland soils, very black, rich soils that celery really does well in. So when we began growing it in, you know, the prosaic places of the U.S., it was no longer really difficult to obtain. It became sort of ubiquitous, and that ruined it for everybody as far as the wealthy people went. Once everybody could get their hands on it, it was no longer the status item.
Yeah. What do you think that means for, you know, if celery was the avocado toast of its day and avocado toast is the avocado toast of this day, what does it mean for the avocado?
I think that you're going to be happy to hear that avocado toast will probably be safe because avocados are kind of in trouble. They're not that easy to grow. You can't just grow them in Kalamazoo, you know. And as far as I know, recent research is showing that because of the way avocados are grown, they're not going to be around much longer. There's a fear that ecologically they might be, I wouldn't say threatened, but certainly they're not going to become common. I think that they're always going to be kind of a luxury item.
I've tried to grow them.
You did? Yeah. From on your windowsill in your kitchen or something. Yes.
And it worked. And I got a 3-foot plant. And then someone told me, oh, well, it will never fruit in that pot. And even if you plant it in the ground, it'll, you know, take 8 to 10 years and you'll just get this hard little rock instead of an actual. Anyway, it was a bummer.
That is a bummer.
Are there other foods that we are eating now that you think we will down the road think of as like laughably gross, like celery?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I think that this kale fascination is going to be one of those head scratchers in 50 years.
I thought you might say kale. Yeah.
Well, kale and cauliflower, too, is really enjoying its moment in the sun. I mean, people are using it as a substitute for rice and as a substitute for pizza crust. And, you know, I'm a lover of the grains and the glutens. And so I can't understand. I'm sure lots of people are just really relieved that they can still enjoy pizza and rice dishes. But yeah, I think that cauliflower is sort of on its way up. It's going to be hitting its zenith pretty soon.
We'll know if there are cauliflower vases.
That's right. Wow. Gosh, you know, maybe we should go into business and make some crystal cauliflower vases. Maybe we can be ahead of this trend.
All right. So first of all, I think I actually have a bag of cauliflower rice in my vegetable drawer right now. My wife is on
that. Oh, you're one of them.
Look, it is what it is. Also, kale can be delicious. Olive oil in an oven at like 450 with some salt. So good.
I like kale. So, legitimately like kale, and I knew she was going to say it, and I was like, I don't know, I really like it. And then there's this one that you make with some soy sauce, and
although
I'm down. I hope kale stays around.
The avocado and the horticultural problems it has, it's getting like to be a monocrop, and there's all kinds of weird things going on with it. So, you know, that could be right.
I know. I will also tell you that after I talked to Heather, I went down the eBay rabbit hole trying to find a celery vase. I was like, I need one.
Oh, stop it. Seriously?
I need it. Yeah, it's so funny.
If you already have a celery vase, but you want to listen to more smart storytelling about food, there is a podcast that we have for you. It's about peanut butter and its impact seriously on federal regulations. The Uncertain Hour is back for a second season.
Yeah, and that, if you don't know, is our original content, deeply reported, wonderful podcast. This season...
It's truly amazing.
It's really amazing. And you should go back and listen to the first season, too, which was all about welfare. I mean, it is fascinating. And in this case, the first episode, that season two, has just arrived. I'm putting a ban on dropped.
Oh, are you? All right. Interesting.
Throwing that out there now.
Arrived is the new dropped?
Season two has arrived. It has landed. It is here. It is posted. And it is a fascinating story about what makes peanut butter peanut butter, featuring a woman known as the Peanut Butter Grandma.
She fought over that question seriously on what makes peanut butter with the federal government. Honest to God, for more than a decade, transformed regulations in the United States. And if you understand anything about what's going on in this current regulatory moment, you understand why that's important. So take a listen, subscribe wherever you do get your podcasts, and let us know what you think, actually, because we think it's super cool and good. Truly.
Yep. Yep. For reals. We'll be back in a moment with our most popular guest by email volume that we have had on Make Me Smart.
Wow. Oh. This is, what's his name? Come on. What's his name? Aaron Copland, right? No?
Zamfir, pan flute. That's lovely.
No, I'm humming along. All right.
I don't know. I like it.
Somebody's going to listen to this and correct me. Producer Jenny's whispering in my ear right now, and she's like, start talking.
Move it along.
Far and away, the most popular episode of this podcast this year, judging by number of downloads, number of emails, number of requests for a full transcript, was episode 12, on which we had a recently retired professor of cognitive science and linguistics whose name is George Lakoff. He taught for a whole lot of years at Cal, at the University of California, Berkeley, and he has done a lot of writing and thinking about the way ideas and beliefs are basically hardwired into our brains.
Yeah, and so hardwired, and this was the thing that was just so astonishing, I almost said blew my mind, but it seems too punny, about our interview, is that our brains are actually able to filter out opposing ideas that challenge our most precious beliefs. It's like they get rejected at the door. And so he gave us some strategies to try to overcome that. And since we are all headed toward the holiday season, where we may find ourselves at dinner tables with people we either don't know very well or know way too well, if you know what I'm talking about, we thought that it might be fun. My brother just texted me the new holiday classic, that Saturday Night Live skit where Adele, the Hello song, like interrupts all the arguing and saves Thanksgiving. Just go Google it. We thought that it might be fun to get Professor Lakoff back on the phone, the actual telephone, to tell us how to survive a holiday dinner where everyone at the table has a different worldview.
There are neural circuits called mutual inhibition, where one worldview will turn off the other, and, you know, either depending on which one is on. Every muscle has an opposing muscle, as if every flexor has an extensor. But what is particularly interesting is that people who are strict conservatives, in most cases, have a progressive worldview for people in their own in-group. It's called in-group nurturance.
What you're essentially trying to do is to get the person you are talking to or arguing with, perhaps, to flex another muscle in their brains.
I've had lots of students over the years who were progressive who said, I'm going to see my grandfather, who's very conservative, or my mother-in-law, or whoever, some aunt who is very conservative. What do I do? And I said, look, when you encounter your grandfather, realize the first thing. Your grandfather cares about you. Your grandfather wants to love you. So what you do is you ask your grandfather a simple question, which is, what are you most proud of that you've done for someone else? Not for anything for yourself, but for someone else. And what they all come back from Thanksgiving with is stories that their grandfather or aunt or whoever tells them of all sorts of things that they've done for good people in their in-group. And what happens is, yes, they have nurturance. They care. And my answer to that is, you know, don't try to challenge them. Ask them to talk about it more. Because the more they talk about it, the more the nurturing part of their brain is strengthened. Now, the similar case occurs for conservatives, coming to see liberals. And the question there is, when do you need discipline? Or when do you make sure that your child has certain kinds of internal discipline? And the answer is pretty clear. The child needs to be disciplined if they're going to eat well, if they're going to play nicely with their other children, if they're going to be respectful of other people, and so on. There are many, many, many ways in which progressives have to have their own form of discipline. As a professor, I had one. It was do your homework. If you do your homework, you'll get a good grade. If you don't, you won't.
I love that. I love the thought exercise here, and mm-hmm. I want to practice it. And here are Professor Lakoff's final thoughts on the matter.
There will always be people who think differently because worldviews are different. And it's important to understand that that will happen. And when it happens, you have to say, this is normal. They're not bad people. They're good people. Let me find out about them. Let me find out what they believe. Let me ask them questions about who they are and what they believe and why. And when you do that, it's important because people want to be asked about what they believe and who they are, and they want to tell you. And just telling you means that they have a relationship with you. And you're just asking them means that you've been kind to them. It helps.
Be kind. That's the last word on that one. Just be kind. How
that
about
is
that?
A wonderful right? holiday lesson.
You can listen to the whole interview we did with George Lakoff in episode 12. Also read the transcript at makemesmart.org.
More from you next, but first, we got to pay the bills.
With the launch of ChatGPT, Sam Altman and OpenAI reinvigorated our imaginations and fears of a world with artificial intelligence. While the company looked like a stunning success from the outside, a battle was brewing within on what the future of AI should be. Almost a year after launching ChatGPT, that battle erupted into a war when the company fired its charismatic CEO, Sam Altman. From Wondery, Business Wars is a podcast about the biggest corporate rivalries of all time. And in the newest season, host David Brown digs into the philosophical differences within OpenAI that culminated in Sam Altman's shocking firing, the chaos that followed, and what it means for the future and safety of AI in the modern world. Follow Business Wars on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus. And for more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts, with shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more. Wondery means business.
Get one of the most successful broadcasts in television history on your schedule with the 60 Minutes podcast. Hard-hitting investigative reports, news, and culture maker interviews, and in-depth profiles are waiting for you in every episode. Listen to 60 Minutes every Sunday wherever you get your podcasts.
We gon' be all right.
It is dancing time. That is, of course.
No, it's not. No, it's not.
And
no,
I know you know.
No, there is no dancing.
It is over here. Okay, it is fine. In Oakland. That is Kendrick Lamar singing All Right from his 2015 album To Pimp a Butterfly, possibly the best named album of all time. All Right was nominated for multiple Grammys, including Song of the Year, and it really became an anthem for the Black Lives Matter movement. And we're talking about this because if you remember on last week's episode, we talked about populism and how it and protest has inspired incredible music. And I made the offhanded remark, where is all the protest music today? The answer to that question, turns out, is Kendrick Lamar singing All Right, to name just one. And as always, one of our listeners, Danny, put it best. He said, quote, there is a huge catalog of hip hop artists, especially when you dig below the mainstream, that focus their talent and experiences into critiquing the status quo. And so we thank you, Danny, and many others who wrote to us about on a similar topic. We have an article up on our site, makemesmart.org, about the history of protest songs in America. And if you want to go down a great YouTube rabbit hole on this one, like if you're just hiding in another room during Thanksgiving dinner.
Come join me.
Do it. Do it.
Finally, on this Thanksgiving episode, it is time for the question that always makes people think out loud, actually.
Something I thought I knew.
That's a really tough question.
That's a big old hunker of a question.
Gosh, that is good.
Hi, Molly and Kai. This is Lily from Eastern North Carolina, and this is my answer to the Make Me Smart question. I grew up in one of the regions of the country that everybody's talking about these days. Working class, rural, Southern, a bubble. As a kid, I saw Southern culture and white Southern culture specifically, but I thought I was sort of above it. I didn't have much of an accent. I was well educated. I thought I basically had no culture, which is a sentiment I think a lot of white Americans share. It wasn't until I went to college that I realized I was super, super wrong. The cultural differences I noticed between people from the same country were mind-blowing. Mm-hmm. I think I was particularly attuned to notice these differences because people are always down to make fun of a Southerner. But it wasn't just that I got made fun of for the Southern accent I didn't think that I had. I also noticed some big cultural differences across the board. We were different in how we communicated, how we planned social events, how we handled stress and confrontation, how we approached professors, everything. Overall, I think we'd all do well to reflect more on how culture has impacted our lives and why we hold the beliefs that we do. Recognizing your own culture and how others' cultures might be different could help us communicate better, and I think it would help us become more creative, compassionate people.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. You know, I went to school down in Atlanta, and I went from suburban New York City to Atlanta, Georgia, back when Atlanta was not the Atlanta of today, let us just say that. It blew my mind how different it was. And I think, you know, if I had come out to L.A. at that point, it still would have been completely amazingly different. And I think that's she had good stuff to say.
Mm-hmm. Also, a really good argument for going and living somewhere else.
Travel. Travel, travel.
Even if it's not college, you know?
Yeah,
yep.
Totally
get out.
Travel.
Get out Go. Into the world.
Speaking of getting out, ooh, that was almost, that was segue, that was awesome ending segue number two. That's two in a row.
Wow.
Two in a
You're
row.
In fuego.
I am so good.
In fuego today.
There you go. And look, just like that, the music comes up.
You know, it's so funny because Kendrick Lamar also has a song called Be Humble. Just throwing that out there.
Look, man.
In the oeuvre.
When you're right, you're right. Make Me Smart is produced by Jenny Josephson and senior producer Nancy Pargali. This week's program was engineered by Drew Jostat. Our theme music is composed by Ben Talladay and Daniel Ramirez.
Our executive director of On Demand is Sitara Nieves.
Fancy new job.
Congrats, Sitara Nieves. And the senior vice president and general manager is Deborah Clark. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
That's the same old job. She's got the same old job.
She's not updating her LinkedIn.
We're totally not. Although I told you this. She's the one who told me to update my LinkedIn.
I know. I just got a LinkedIn request from someone in our organization. I'm just saying, dishy.
Look, networking is everything, man. You never know. Boom. Out of here.
Strong communication skills are critical for success in business and in life. Hi, I'm Matt Abrahams, and I host Stanford Graduate School of Business's Think Fast, Talk Smart, the podcast. Each week, I sit down with experts to discuss the best tips to help you with your communication skills, from conflict management to mastering small talk to tackling communication anxiety. Join us and start to develop and hone your communication skills. Listen every Tuesday wherever you get your podcasts or on YouTube.